the Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, our semi-regular look at Auburn football and related matters, brought to you in association with the War Eagle Reader. You can visit the War Eagle Reader at www.thewareaglereader.com. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host,
John Ringer.
And John, this week the plan is to look at where the Auburn program stands as of now, with National Signing Day just behind us, and lots of new faces coming to the plains. So why don't you take the point position here and kind of lead us through how you see this playing out?
Well, I think the first thing is we haven't talked a lot since we've talked a little bit since the big changeover coaching staff, but you know, it's been a couple of months. A lot has happened. I think it's a good time to sit down and talk about kind of where Auburn is, what's happened, and where it's going. And we talk about, you know, how we feel about the coaches, how we feel about the program, and kind of the momentum, where it is. And then, you know, these specific recruits, where we think they fit in with the depth chart, where we think the big question marks are going into spring practice.
Okay, sounds good.
So I guess the first thing is you and I are both, as we talked about earlier, very, very excited about Malzahn's hiring and the hiring of the coaching staff. We think he did an excellent job, and I think it showed in recruiting, where they only had, you know, a very short period of time to pick up the pieces from the recruiting class that was kind of hanging out there waiting on them, and to reach out to all these other guys who hadn't been committed to Auburn before and try to make inroads with them. And they're competing against coaching staffs who have been working on these players for 2 years with the same people. Mm-hmm. So it's a big disadvantage, and they did an amazing job considering the time and resources they had.
Amazing. Yeah, I couldn't believe they came in like 6 weeks. And it would have been one thing if they came in and were able to pull all the players back in, but they weren't able to always do that. But what they were able to do was actually go out and find equally good or better players that hadn't been considering us as much and pull them in. And I think in some cases, players I'd rather have on my team, if you know what I mean.
Sure. And we can talk about that. The one thing that did change in the kind of in the middle of recruiting was we did have one assistant coaching change. We hadn't had a chance to talk about Bisaccio leaving. We were excited when he came in because he had a great NFL special teams background, and then he left in January back to the NFL to work for the Dallas Cowboys. And I guess I understand.
It's kind of a lateral move, I guess.
Lateral. Auburn, Dallas Cowboys. But, you know. But I was upset when he did it because he was going to be in demand as an NFL coach, mm-hmm. as assistant coach. And so if he knew that, he had to be sure when he came to Auburn that he wanted to be in college and didn't want to go back to the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I think he was sure at that time. The one thing that changed is he was a guy who spent a lot of time in Tampa Bay when they had those great years. And he worked under Monty Kiffin with that defense with Derek Brooks and all those guys. And now what he couldn't foresee happening when he came to Auburn is Monty Kiffin got let go as the Southern Cal defensive coordinator, and he's the Dallas Cowboys defensive coordinator. So that created a situation where this was kind of Bisaccio's mentor or whatever, and friend said, hey, I really want you to come back here and work with us. And that was probably tough for him to say no to. And I think they offered him, you know, several hundred thousand more dollars. So
yeah, probably a couple more dollars. Yeah. So. Yeah, I know, I agree, but it's you know, I guess in a way, if you're going to lose a coach pretty early, I guess within like a week almost is about the way to do it, because he probably hadn't even unpacked the things in his office yet. So we were able to kind of just, you know, Gus made a couple of adjustments and just moved as the coach we got from Arkansas, right, just moved over to running back. So, you know, I mean, I guess it was about as painful. I mean, well, it was about as painless of a way of handling something like that as could be done, I guess.
Well, and the Arkansas coach, I mean, this is a guy that coached the running backs there, which Auburn fans are very familiar with since they've run over us for about the last 10 years when this guy was there. So he clearly could do the job in that position. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah.
And we moved up a guy, former high school coach, special teams coordinator. We'll see how that goes. But the other thing about Bisaccio leaving when he did, it was tough because he had actually been in Richmond recruiting that Derek Green guy right before he took the job and left. So that probably didn't help us in that situation. But at the other side, him leaving when he did, it was allowed Auburn to be honest with recruits and say, here's who the position coaches are, here's who you're going to be working with. And as we'll talk about in a minute when we get into more depth about recruiting, other programs were not as honest about that situation.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Well, so recruiting, you want to dig on into that? And
sure. I guess first a little disclaimer before we get into the recruiting discussion too much. Van and I are not recruiting gurus.
No.
Okay. We follow recruiting as fans and we're interested in it. We read about it, but you know, we're not going to combines and doing 40 times. And you know, I the one recruit this year that actually saw play in high school was Derek Green. And that's only because he played one of my daughter's high school football teams. And
wow.
I was there, but that was like, we played him last year and I didn't even know who he was or, you know, I just thought he was really good, but I didn't think, oh, wow, Auburn's recruiting this guy at the time.
That's fun.
But I think it's important for people to understand, we're going to talk about recruiting from a little bit of a layman's perspective but more about how it fits in with the current Auburn roster and where we think, you know, it's going to fit in. I want to say a couple things in general about recruiting. The first is I have some strong feelings about what our role as fans is in the recruiting process.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that, you know, as a fan and as an adult, you do not need to be communicating with recruits at all during this process. You don't need to be communicating with them on Facebook. You don't need to be direct messaging them on Twitter. You don't need to be emailing them or texting them or talking to them if you see them on the street. You know, you're a fan. You're not a coach. You're not the recruiter. Let the coaches deal with that kind of stuff and just stay out of it. I feel very strongly that, you know, way too many people are kind of inserting themselves into the process. Social media makes it very easy and people get all worked up because of what, you know, some recruit posts on their Twitter feed or Facebook or whatever. And people need to let that go a little bit because I'm talking about like 17-year-olds.
And, well, if I can add one thing to that, though, there are some people who have, I think that you stated that point very well, but there are some who take that almost to the extreme and go around accusing anybody who's remotely interested in recruiting virtually of pedophilia. And that that really gets on my nerves because I said like one thing on Twitter about recruiting a month or so ago. I mean, just like one innocuous thing. And I had some guy like relentlessly tweeting at me until I had to block him, saying it's just creepy how you people like you are just obsessed with these kids and following them around. I'm like, sir, I'm not obsessed with any kids. Go away. You know, so it's one thing to approach it like that. It's another, I think, to look at it as these are potential players that could be on our team in the future, and we're at least interested in, you know, what sort of players they are and what school they might be going to. Are they coming to Auburn or not? I don't think there's anything wrong with that, reason and within limits.
There's not. That's right. But I don't need to know everything about those kids,
right.
And I don't need to know, you know, every second of the day what they're doing and how they're feeling about it.
Right.
And the other part is, I don't take it personally. You know, if some kid decides to come to Auburn, great. I'm excited about that. I'm happy. I'm happy for them because they made, you know, hopefully a really good decision for them and what's the best for their future. But if some kid decides that they need to go to another school and that's the best place for them, I don't take it personally. I don't feel it. You know, it's some kind of slap at me or even at Auburn. Sometimes the better fit is just at another place, and that's okay. You know, we did not – the thing that – even worse than the, you know, communicating with recruits and saying, hey, you know, you need to come to our school is the communicating with recruits and saying, you're an idiot for going, you know, committing to this other school. You know, how could you – I hate your guts or whatever. You know, people take that stuff way too seriously. And, again, you know – you have no idea what's going on with this kid's life. Maybe he broke up with his girlfriend and his girlfriend's going to Ole Miss, and so he doesn't want to go there now. You just have to, you know, you don't have any idea what all those details are. People need to, I think, step back and not get upset to the level that some people do in terms of where players go. The other part about that is I want to say, we were talking about Bisaccia earlier. People get all mad when recruits commit to one place and then flip and go somewhere else and change their mind. And number one, they're 18-year-olds and they're going to change their mind. It's going to happen. But the other part is look at all the coaching changes in college football since National Signing Day. It's disgusting. Those kids sign a contract. They can't get out of it. They have to sit out a year or 2 years to transfer somewhere. But you look, the Georgia defensive coordinator was interviewing at the Saints on Friday.
That's amazing. Okay?
All those Georgia defensive commits thought he was going to be there. Okay? Mm-hmm. Southern Cal fired their offensive coordinator and the running back coach. And they got two of the top running backs in the country. Those kids thought he was going to be their guy. And right after signing day, they got rid of him. What does that say? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the LSU got a new offensive coordinator. Now, he might be an improvement. But again, the kids who committed on offense committed thinking that was the guy they were going to be working with. So, you know, to me, it's very dishonest for colleges to shuffle the coaching staff after signing day when the kids are locked in. They can't change, but the coaches can change. So the next time you hear somebody, you know, complaining about some kid exploring his options and looking around, you know, remember this, because like, you know, some of these kids that committed to certain positions and other position coaches gone, they're unhappy and they can't do anything about it.
I want you to imagine a scenario where Auburn fired Trooper Taylor the day after signing day this year.
Sure.
I mean, imagine the nuclear explosion at Reuben Foster's house alone.
Sure. Well, here's another thing. The Alabama offensive line coach Southland left for the NFL this week.
Yep.
After National Signing Day, after they signed it. And I guarantee you, those players did not know he was leaving. Mm. They thought, oh, I'm going to get to work for the same guy, you know, who's coached these other players and developed them.
Got them into the NFL, yeah.
That's right, and they don't. So just keep that in mind the next year when guys are switching their commitments and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I want to say in general about recruiting is there's a lot of what I like to think of as kind of the recency error in looking at recruiting and recruiting classes. And people always get much more excited about the guy who committed at the end than the guy who committed at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Because guys, in Auburn's case, guys like, you know, Jeremy Johnson and Ernest Robinson and some of these other guys have been committed for so long. We were excited about him all along. But Tony, that linebacker from Huntsville and stuff, these guys have been committed for so long that Auburn people have just taken it for granted.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that just because a guy committed on signing day or the week before signing day that he's more important from a class perspective and from an impact perspective than these guys who committed from the beginning. And in Auburn's case, those guys were really important because they were calling other recruits and saying, hey, you know, stick with it. We're going to be okay and stuff. And, I give Jeremy Johnson and those guys a lot of credit for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, they were basically recruiting coaches, graduate assistants out on the trail even before they finished high school.
Sure.
Doing really good work there. Yeah, that's right.
So, all right, let's move on to talk a little bit about this specific recruiting class and kind of where this puts the roster as a whole and this class, you know, some specific positions and then the depth chart kind of implications.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one thing, one email one of your guys sent me yesterday that makes a lot of sense. You were looking at the number of players that are different classes, and it breaks down like this. 16 seniors, 30 juniors, 23 sophomores, 9 redshirt freshmen, 17 true freshmen. And out of the true freshmen, say maybe half of them will redshirt and half of them will play. So, you know, still 16 seniors and not a ton of them are big impact players.
The kickers may be the best, most impact players on that senior.
Sure.
What's the how did we end up with 30 juniors? I'm sure there's a story there that I've just forgotten. Is that a combination of a redshirt class and a regular class?
Yeah, it's a combination. The first year when Chizik and them came in, a lot of those guys redshirted, and so they're redshirt juniors now.
So that's guys like Trey Mason and Kyle Frazier and kind of looking at who's a junior, Brandon Fultz. Yeah, there are just a lot of juniors on this team. Trevon Reed. Oh, boy. Yeah. Quan Bray. Guys, we've been waiting to kind of do something. This is maybe their big opportunity to finally, you know.
Well, it's their opportunity to either do something or get out of the way.
Yeah.
Because other players are coming who are talented and can play, and those guys are going to have to step up or move along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about a couple of specific players that we're excited about. You tell me two or three specific players you're excited about, and then I'll tell you two or three of mine, and then we'll talk about kind of position by position where we think the roster is going to go.
Okay, well, obviously Carl Lawson, I guess he was like the number two rated lineman in the country or something behind the Nakim Jikibiki guy that went to Ole Miss. And this junior college running back, Cameron Artis Payne, I guess. Absolutely. I just like anybody named Cameron coming on our team right now. And then didn't we pick up a new guy to kind of run the McCaleb spot, the little scat position?
Well, one of the two running backs that we got, either Ford or the
We picked up several, two or three at least, decent running backs, right?
So, all right, Peyton Barber.
Peyton Barber, yeah.
The two guys, Jonathan Ford, Peyton Barber. Anything, you know, you got to have those two kind of guys, like in the Dyer kind of guys, and then the McCaleb kind of guys for this offense, the kind of the little scat backy, quick kind of guys, and the between the tackle kind of guys. And I think, you know, Cameron Artis Payne could certainly help with inside, with that side of it. And then I think, you know, we'll see what some of these other guys, where they go with it. I mean, Barber's, you know, 206 pounds. You know, he could probably handle some of that. The other guy's much smaller. Ford is like 170, so he's more of a McCaleb kind of guy. McCaleb's gone. We're going to need some people at that position. He may be a thing where he could step in and play right away in that area.
Oh, the other one I meant to mention was Montravius Adams. I mean, that had to be the biggest get at the end, right?
Oh, gigantic.
Yeah.
I mean, just, you can't, you know, Lawson and Adams are the kind of guys that play on SEC defensive lines. I mean, the big, physical, fast, disruptive players, the kind of guys you got to have that, you know, have defensive lines like, you know, like we Auburn has had in the past, and like, you know, LSU and Alabama and Georgia have had recently. Those are the kind of players you got to have. And, you know, Adams is coming into a position, a defensive tackle, where we haven't been very productive the last 2 years. We haven't got a lot of push in the middle. We get pushed around when other teams are running the ball. We're not certainly not disrupting the other side. And we bring in him, and we bring in the junior college guy who saw it earlier, Ben Bradley. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I could easily see a situation where by the middle of the year, those two guys are playing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And making a difference in the middle of the field. I mean, I think it's one of these cases where there's a lot of guys on Auburn's roster at that position that haven't stepped up and haven't made a lot of plays to this point. Blackson and Kenneth Carter and these other guys. And, you know, they're going to have to step up. They're going to have to make plays, get stronger, get faster, work harder, because these guys are coming in and they're going to expect to play.
And I kind of like seeing a couple of four-star receivers come in, because our receiving core, ever since Darvin Adams and Terrell Zachary graduated, has been something of a disappointment. I mean, Emory Blake obviously was a first-rate, you know, receiver. But besides him, they fell off the earth after those three guys. So
that's right. And it just continually disappointing. Mm-hmm. And some of it is the, you know, the quarterback play. They can't throw the ball themselves as much as they might try to, but you're right. We needed a big class, a really good receiving class. What we need is that kind of class we got, you know, the year we got Obamanu, Rumshodu, Mix, Courtney
Yeah.
Taylor,
the 2002 recruiting class is probably the best in Auburn history, I would argue.
In terms of receivers, sure. So
in
we
receivers,
needed,
yeah.
We need a class like that. Maybe not as good as that, but in that direction, mm-hmm, to really turn this position around. And I think we got it. I mean, you know, we got the two teammates out of Florida, Tony Stevens and Dominic Walker. We got the guy that was committed all along to us from Alabama, Robinson, who's you know, really good. And then I love the Jason Smith guy. That's the one I'm most excited about. A guy from South Alabama. He played quarterback in high school, but during the Alabama-Mississippi All-Star game, converted to receiver, was MVP of the game. You know, really elusive, explosive kind of guy. I think he could be excellent at receiver. I think he'd come in and play right away, even though he has not played receiver.
That would make him the Courtney Taylor of this class.
There you go.
Remember, because they all came in together, but Courtney was the one that had been a quarterback, and so he redshirted while all those other guys basically started as freshmen, and he turned out to be the best one.
Yeah, and he may be as big as Courtney Taylor, but that, you're right. That he may take him longer. I mean, I'm I'm hopeful and excited about him, but just because he hasn't played as much receiver, it might take him longer to pick it up.
Well, all those guys that we got are over 6 feet tall. In fact, the 2 4-star guys are both 6'3", so that's pretty impressive.
And we needed some of that. You know, we have a lot of little shrimpy kind of receivers, you know, and I think some of the guys we have had, the bigger guys, haven't done a lot. So I think we needed some guys who can, you know, get up and get the ball when it's thrown to them and be able to handle, not get pushed around by the defense. So.
One more player I wanted to get your thoughts on was McEnroe Alexander. Now, you know, the story there is that there were the twin brothers, I guess, and one was a 5-star and one was a 3-star. And the story goes, I don't know how much is true, the story goes, right, that we offered the 3-star in order to entice the 5-star, and instead the 3-star signed with us and the 5-star went to Clemson. But before I get your thoughts on him, I just want to point out, A, he's now got a chip on his shoulder. B, his name is McEnroe. So I'm expecting him to be yelling, "Look, he stepped on the line, ref, the ball was out. Are you blind? You're the pits of the world, ref." So that's what I'm hoping for from this guy, some fire in the tradition of the McEnroe clan, okay?
If you're interested in those two brothers, there was a really good story on ESPN.com about them. They're from that part of South Florida, Immokalee. I'm not sure I'm saying that right. Really, really poor part of South Florida where there's a bunch of agricultural workers, really poor living conditions for the families, and a lot of good football players come out of there because people are so desperate to get away and escape. And I think he and his brother are kind of the latest in that line of really good players. This guy was not as highly recruited as his brother, but some of it is just a size thing where, you know, he's a little bit shorter. His brother's, he's like, you know, 6'1", 185. His brother was a couple inches taller and a little faster. So his brother looks more like a cornerback, and this guy's more of safety. But that's fine because, you know what, we need safeties. This guy was the all-county defensive player of the year. He made like 180 tackles last year. We needed, you know, athletic, rangy safeties that could hit people. So I'm excited about him. And guys from that part of the world, they don't want to go back there, okay? I mean, he wants to get his degree and go play football on Sunday if he can, and whatever he has to do, he's going to be working hard to do it because he doesn't want to go back there, you know, work on the farms and stuff. So I'm excited about him. I'm excited about the Kahari Harding guy at Oklahoma, who's a 200-pound safety, you know, really good hitter. And I'm excited about the junior college safety we got, King. So that's a position where, to me, we've been way underperforming and caused a lot of problems on defense. And so as far as I'm concerned, those guys are on equal footing with the guys we have coming back, and I wouldn't be shocked at all if a couple of these guys start, especially at that new position, you know, the kind of third safety hybrid linebacker position that Ellis likes to run.
Yeah, that a couple of the players I was curious about your thoughts. We flipped this Elijah Daniel on signing day from Ole Miss, right?
Yep.
It's like the only guy that didn't sign with Ole Miss that was they got everybody else they wanted, but he's another 4 or 5-star defensive lineman. So that's what I was going to mention, was that I think we maybe surprised a lot of people because people thought we'd bring Gus in and he was going to be all offense and ignore the defense or something. And we got a heck of a defensive class here.
Yeah. And I mean, some of it is because they know we need players and they can come in and play. But some of it is because we got great recruiters on outside the ball. Gardner's a great recruiter. Mm-hmm. Charlie Harbison's an excellent recruiter. So, you know, they know what they're doing, and, you know, Damian Craig recruits both sides of the ball. But I think, you know, these guys came in because they knew we needed impact players. They knew they could come in and play. You know, Lawson and Daniel are both defensive ends. Daniel's only about 250, so he's more of a quicker off the edge kind of guy. But we need those guys. I mean, we need impact players in the defensive line. With Lemonnier going pro a year early, there's not a lot of guys on that line that really scare you. D Ford's okay, but he had problems staying on the field, got banged up a little bit. So you need some guys at those positions that can play. And I think, you know, these guys stepped up and signed with Auburn, and I'm excited about it.
The last one I wanted to ask your opinion on, and this may let us transition over to the depth chart maybe, unless there's anybody else you want to talk about, is Nick Marshall. Now, we were talking about him as far back as the middle of last season when we were wishing he could graduate high school early and just come on in and start at quarterback.
You're talking about Jeremy Johnson.
Oh, Jeremy Johnson. I'm sorry. Nick Marshall is the
is the JUCO guy.
He's the JUCO guy that has some sort of run-pass mix to him, right?
Yes.
He's kind of the athlete type. Okay, yeah, I slid the little mouse down a little too far. Right, Jeremy Johnson. He's the one we were talking about. 6'6", 215 out of Montgomery. He's the one that we were talking about as we wish he could go ahead and start for us last season because we were that hard up right at quarterback for a while.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we were joking in my house. My dad was saying he should be able to sign in the middle of the season to come in and play for Auburn last year. That's how good he is and how much we needed him. Now, he's more of a taller passer kind of guy. He can move, he's athletic, but he's not Cam Newton as a runner. But he's an excellent player. I mean, he ran a spread kind of offense in high school, distributed the ball, did a great job, was very productive, sees the field well, he's got a good, very accurate. So, and supposed to be an excellent leader and a good, great kid. So, whether he can come in and play right away, I don't know, but I certainly think Malzahn and them, because it's a new staff and they're putting the new offense back in, they're not going to play any favorites with anybody in the roster. They're going to throw it open to everybody. And I think, he has a chance to come in and play. Whether he comes in and plays right away or red shirts, I don't know. But he's clearly the quarterback of the future. He's it.
Mm-hmm. And how would you rate this recruiting class overall then?
For what the amount of time they had and kind of where they were with letting all the coaches go, mm-hmm. I think it's outstanding. Yeah. I mean, you couldn't expect a lot more than this. I mean, would I have liked to get a couple other guys? Sure. I would have been happy if we signed Reuben Foster. It wouldn't have bothered me, especially because I think linebacker is such a need. But, I'm ecstatic with what they did and the time they had to work with. And I'm excited about, the kind of players they got and the impact players, that are in this class. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you want to slide over to the depth chart real quick?
Sure.
All right. So where do you see the quarterback shaking up? Because that's a real mystery to me. We've got basically, four or five on the roster now, which is a nice thing to have. Interestingly, that it was pointed out to me by the editor of the War Eagle Reader this week, and I don't want to steal his thunder if he's planning on something, an article or something, but this is like the first time in Auburn history that all of our quarterbacks on our roster are African-American, so that's kind of an interesting milestone that we've reached there.
I didn't even think about it.
Yeah, and we shouldn't think about it, but it's just an interesting milestone, particularly given the history, and everything.
Sure.
So do you keep Wallace or Frazier as your starter this fall if you're Coach Malzahn, or do you let one of these new guys kind of take the reins? What do you think?
It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I don't think Johnson or Marshall can go through spring practice. I think both those guys have to wait till the summer and the fall to get into practice. So I think, in spring, we're going to see, Frazier versus Wallace. And Frazier last year, when things got bad and when the pressure was in his face, he just didn't respond very well, and it really concerns me. I know he grew up in this system and he knows it, and he's going to feel 1,000 times more comfortable running the offense, running the plays. But
and I hope so.
But he really concerned me last year when the pressure was on and the decisions that he made sometimes. Mm-hmm. And Wallace, I think he's a good, solid player. He's productive. I think he's a good leader. You can see the team have a little more confidence when he's out there. But I just feel like his ceiling for what he could do as a quarterback, it's at a certain level where he would be like a productive SEC starter. But I really feel like, Marshall and Johnson's ceiling, and even theoretically Frazier's ceiling, if his head gets on straight, mm-hmm. are much higher than Wallace's. I think Wallace is safer.
Right.
From that he's played. You know what he can do and he can't do, and he's going to at least be productive. But I think those other guys have a much higher ceiling in terms of explosive plays, better passing arm, that kind of stuff.
So the part of Barrett Trotter will be played by Jonathan Wallace this year.
Well, and I think I could certainly see him in a situation ending up as the number two quarterback. Let's say that Jeremy Johnson doesn't win the starting job in the fall, mm-hmm. then maybe redshirt him. have Wallace and Frazier kind of as the backup. And even like now Jason Smith, they've said he's going to come in and try to play quarterback. You know, I think ultimately he's going to end up a receiver, but, you know, you could throw him in that mix too. I mean, he may be a receiver who comes in sometimes when they want to run some quarterback run kind of stuff too.
Well, he weighs less than me. I'm not sure. Yeah.
I'm not talking about the Cam Newton third and one quarterback run. I'm talking about some other kind of stuff. But so, I mean, to me, I really think, you know, I'm not sure if Frazier's going to get it back. I'm not. So I would lean towards, I really think it's going to be somebody different we haven't seen before starting quarterback this fall. I think it's going to be Marshall or Johnson. Mm-hmm. And because Marshall's a junior college guy and he's older, he's got more experience, I think I'm leaning towards him. I think it's going to be him as quarterback this fall.
Nick Marshall.
Yeah. I mean, he was a very productive high school quarterback in Georgia. I think he still has the state TD passing record.
Wow.
And then he went to Georgia and played defensive back, got kicked off the team at Georgia because one of his roommates stole another player's money and he didn't turn the roommate in, is the theory. Hmm. And so they got kicked off the team. He went to junior college, played quarterback at junior college, and had, you know, like 3,000 yards passing and 1,000 yards rushing and a bunch of touchdowns. So, you know, very explosive, athletic guy. And I'm excited to see what he can do. He's not huge. He's like, you know, 6'2", 205, 210, but, you know, supposed to be the kind of guy athletically who, if he doesn't start a quarterback, he could go over and start the secondary. He's that kind of talent.
Well, it just looks to me like Gus and Lashley have some tools to work with here. I mean, they've got some guys that surely out of that crowd, they can find one that can, you know, do a decent job. So,
well, and I think that's the way you got to approach all these positions, and it's the right way, is you don't bring in guys to say it's all you. I think we've got a situation last year. We didn't have enough depth and talent in that position. Mm-hmm. So they want to bring in a lot of talent and say, all right, let's have competition. The best guy's going to win and play. And then you're not in a position where you're desperate.
Well, in a similar vein, we've got a running back in Trey Mason who's not huge, but he's a tough son of a gun. I mean, he's just hard to bring down. And, I mean, you know, he got 1,000 yards last year under that regime, which I think says it all, right? We joked last season that that Trey Mason getting 1,000 yards in that situation was a huge accomplishment. But we're bringing in this junior college guy, the 210 pounds, so he outweighs Mason by a good 15 pounds, roughly, a little taller even. Cameron Artis Payne. You think Artis Payne is the featured guy in the sort of the Michael Dyer role back there, or and what will Trey be doing?
I do. I mean, I really like Cameron Artis Payne. I think he's going to be very productive in this offense. He really has kind of a chip on his shoulder. He thinks he's going to be a stud, and I think he's going to be a very productive SEC running back. I think it's going to be the two of those guys kind of sharing that the run. You know, with Gus, there's plenty of carries to go around, and I think it's going to be those two guys being the between the tackle, most of the time running backs. Mm-hmm. We really had to recruit running backs because, you know, Mikhail graduated, mm-hmm. Blakely transferred again.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what his deal was. I can't figure him out anymore.
I mean, it's disappointing. He clearly had talent, but then when he got in the field, he fumbled a bunch and kept getting in the doghouse that way. But
he was taking the Mario Fannin position.
There you go. But when he ran the ball and didn't fumble, he was exciting. You're right. Like, wow, well, that guy's not bad.
The Mario Fannin position.
Exactly. So, let's hope that nobody else takes the Mario Fannin position right away.
Right,
so.
Yeah, I think we can retire that position. As much as we like seeing him play, but he did have issues. So you think, what about Corey Grant? He's kind of been the man lost in the shuffle the last couple of years.
And I think, you know, the good thing about Gus, what we've seen with this offense before, is they'll find ways to get guys in the right position to be successful. And I think Grant could be a guy, either between the tackles or on the kind of the McCaleb role, where I think he could be productive, running to the outside, you know, if they're faking the ball inside and then running a sweep around. I think he could be productive in that role as kind of the third running back out of the backfield.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing Jay Prosh in that Eric Smith role, actually being able to do something productive. I mean, he'll probably catch some passes, he'll throw some blocks, and he'll actually be on the field, John, at the same time as a running back.
crazy town.
I know.
He's perfect for that Eric Smith role. If you remember, you know, in 2009, he was so good in that role. It made such a difference. And I think Prosh should be great in that.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Let's see, any other position battles of note? You know, where do you think these you think any of these freshmen coming in will be able to start on the lines, maybe on the defensive line or anything? Or is it just too hard for freshmen to play a line position?
On the offensive line, we really recruit one other junior college guy, named Devontae Danzy, and that is a guard. And I think, you know, we've lost one guard in the NFL, and I think this guy is going to battle with the guys who redshirted last year,
mm-hmm.
you know, Diamond and Kozon and those guys for starting a guard. And that wouldn't shock me a bit. I don't have a problem with Malzahn and them going out and getting these junior college guys because we have holes, and we need guys who could come in and start at an SEC level right away and play, and I think they could do that. I fully expect the junior college defensive tackle Bradley to start at one of those positions. I mean, the guy's a 300-pound guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bigger, older, more athletic guy who's already played a couple years junior college, and I think he could step in and, you know, right there in the middle and be one of the anchors. Will Adams start at defensive tackle? I don't think so, but I think he'll be in the rotation. I mean, I think he's too good. I think you put him in there with Bradley, Gabe Wright, Blackson, Kenneth Carter, and Whitaker, and suddenly you got five guys kind of in those two spots you can, you know, keep throwing in there to do something. And I mean, I think Lawson could play right away in the rotation, and by the end of the year he could be a starter.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's that good. I think he's that fast and explosive. And I think, you know, and we have Ford, we have Nosa Igwe, who's been kind of up and down. He seems kind of better against the run, but not great against the pass. So I could see a situation where at the beginning of the year, Lawson is coming in a third down, rush the passer kind of thing.
Well, we're nearly out of time for our allotted time today, but let's wrap up by giving our sort of outlook for next year in general. Now, we're planning on coming back later on and talking about the schedule and the season and going in depth on that, and that'll be a lot of fun. We'll do that a bit later on. Maybe in the spring or something, or around A Day or something. But how, overall, just a quick paragraph or so, how do you see the things going forward for next year?
Well, I mean, I think you have to be excited. You know, there's talent on the roster. There was talent on the roster last year. You know, maybe not as much as we thought, but there clearly is some. We've added a good amount this recruiting class. We didn't lose a ton. So I think there's a good base for them to work with, and I think we have a really good coaching staff, especially on offense. It's going to be light years better. I think we're going to be able to move the ball and score points. And I think defensively, Ellison then will shore up the areas where we're weak. And so I think, you know, I'm excited. I think Auburn's going to be competitive. I don't think we'll be great, world dominating right away, but I think we're going to be competitive. And the biggest thing is going to be get somebody to emerge a quarterback that can really make plays and do some damage.
Right, and you know, if nothing else, you won't have that stomach-churning feeling watching our offense because Gus actually knows what he's doing. I'm actually kind of looking forward in a strange way to watching Virginia Tech just to see if Loeffler even knows what he's doing. I said his name. Oh, don't say it. But
let me tell you, I live in Virginia, and several Virginia Tech fans have approached me and said, so – how should I feel about Scott Loeffler as offensive coordinator? And I was like, what do I say here to try to be polite? You know, maybe it was all Chizik's fault. Maybe we didn't have a quarterback. But,
we wrote a column comparing him to Richard III, but otherwise.
Yeah, I didn't send that to them. I tried to be nice. But it will be really fun to watch what happens with Loeffler. I don't think he's as bad as he showed last year. I think the Clemson game showed that. You know, he's a little bit knows what he's doing, but as the year went along, I think it just the wheels fell off and he was terrible.
Yeah, so. I think he was the lightning rod of it. And I don't think he did great, but I agree that but what we know now that we didn't know last year makes me give him the tiny little bit of slack. I mean, he was facing clearly a deteriorating situation internally with the team as well as other various divisive issues. So. Well, you know, I kind of look at this. I think that we have a possibility of doubling our win total, and that doesn't sound great for an Auburn fan, but it does mean maybe we get a shot at a bowl game. So, you know, if we could do well there and actually win the bowl game, we could end with 7 wins, which would be a tremendous uptick for a team that, honestly, I think last year, if we had played Louisiana Tech or Louisiana Monroe, whoever it was that we almost lost to at the beginning of the year, mm-hmm. if we had played them toward the end, I think they would have beaten us.
Sure.
So we could have very easily had 2 wins last year and be talking about tripling our win total to get to 6 this year. So I feel like they're going to have to show me that Gus is really a miracle worker and to do better than that. And it's not his fault or anybody else's other than just that's the situation we're in right now. But yeah, I feel tremendous optimism. I've been excited, as everybody that listens to the show knows, since we hired him. I can't wait, and if nothing else, it will be at least be fun to watch. Win or lose, at least we'll enjoy watching Auburn football again. Hallelujah.
Amen.
All right. Well, all right. Well, I think we need to wrap up and get on out of here. Appreciate you folks tuning in. We'll be back again probably pretty soon with our next episode talking about what's coming up in more detail. But this has been the Wishbone Podcast. John, thanks a bunch.
Thanks a lot, Van. War Eagle.
War Eagle.